images of Christ. What do they have to say about him? What do they have to say about you? That's the focus of today's show. As we start our 12th year of podcasting, this is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the spiritual, emotional, physical, psychological, and everything in between. This is episode 576 of The Next Step. Let's take it right now.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to our 12th year of broadcasting, The Next Step with Father Voskin. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Voskin brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Well, welcome to our 12th year of podcasting. Can you believe it? 11 years ago today, yes, 11 years ago today, we kicked off The Next Step when people didn't even know what a podcast was. Little did we know what it was or what it entailed, but we knew it was a way to get the message out, and we started with very little resources, and here we are at our 11th anniversary. Yeah, 11 years. Wow. 11 years ago. And we are kicking off, like I said, our 12th year. And how exciting is that? Well, you want to do the numbers? You want to do the numbers with me? Okay. 575 episodes, actually 76. We did a very special one way back in the first year, which was right around the time of China was hosting the Olympics. That was in our first year. Okay, so 576 episodes of The Next Step. At an average of 50 minutes per episode, well, you do the math, you come up to about 480 hours. Okay, now, how does that translate in our life? Well, if you were not to sleep day or night, if you were to keep your ears tuned and alert, you could, yes, you could stream, because it's possible, we have them all archived. You could stream and binge on The Next Step, and it would take you almost 3 weeks, day and night, 24/7, 3 weeks, you'd be finished with The Next Step. 480 hours, 576 episodes. And I'm so thankful. I'm very thankful that we have this opportunity, that God gave us this very special ministry to reach out in this manner. And I'm thankful to all of you for listening, for putting up with us, for putting up with me, right? For your support and all of the kind words and thoughts, but most importantly, for your prayers. Thank you for being with us. And as I said last week, as we finished off our 11th year of podcasting, I said I'd like to do a two-part. So last week I talked about, well, the reality of the church, what the church means and what is it as a real institution, body of Christ. And I said today I would talk about Christ. I would talk about who Jesus is to me. And this is very important because we're going to get a little bit personal. Because if you look at pictures of Jesus, you got to realize that, hey, not all of the pictures that we have represent him. Perhaps a few of them do, the actual Jesus. But the pictures that we have are basically reflections of what we believe Jesus to be. There was no photograph. There was no digital camera then. There was no pixels on pixels. There was no networks to speak of. There was not even like a Flintstonian monkey with a chisel to chisel out his picture. No, it's speculation. And that's what I want to talk to you about today, who Jesus is to us. What is our image of Jesus? And I want to share with you what is the image of Jesus for me. Father Voskin, what it means to me, where this ministry is at this 12th year, as we begin this 12th year, what is it that we're trying to do? Sure, Susie tells you at the beginning, we're reaching out to the neophyte. We're touching people with a very unique message where you don't have to check your brain in at the door. It's a thinking man's religion. It's an opportunity to really take a look at the things around you and realize there's a blessing of God in every action we take and in everything we see all around us. But here's the important part. What is that central character, Jesus, all about? Now, this is, I want to say this at the very beginning, because in the Orthodox circles, there's sometimes a fear of talking about Jesus because it may sound what's called Protestant. And, you know, this is like something, I have an American flag in front of my house. And would you believe that recently somebody came and said, oh, I didn't know you were Republican. Now, here in America, in the United States, somehow people have gotten the impression that if you have a flag, it means that you are Republican. No, it doesn't. A flag is a symbol of a country of the United States, which is greater than the parties that represent it in Congress and in government, okay? No, an American flag is a symbol of the United States of America. So too, in our Christianity, we look at different parts of it, and whether you call Jesus, as you refer to Jesus Christ as Jesus, you refer to him as Christ in the Christian context. I'm not talking outside of it, because obviously outside of it, both Jesus and Christ would mean different things. But in the Christian context, it is one and the same person. But how we perceive that Jesus, that's what I want to share with you today. And it certainly doesn't belong to the Protestants to refer to him as Jesus. Are you ready for this? One of the greatest Armenian Orthodox theologians that has ever lived in the 2,000 years of our existence, named Nerses Shnorhali, Nerses Galayetsvoin. One of his books is called Jesus Son, Jesus Vorti. Yeah. I was looking through it in preparation for today's podcast, and I thought to myself, wow, if you read this, you would think that automatically you'd say, oh, this man must be a Protestant. No! Christianity doesn't belong to the Protestants. The Protestants protested against something that they saw that was bad in the church. Okay, there was reform, but Protestants do not have a claim on Jesus. Jesus Christ is the incarnation of God. This we believe. This is what we profess, and if we profess it, we have to have an understanding of it. Now, let me ask you, what do you think Jesus looked like? There is a picture of Jesus, actually two of them, that are very close and dear to me. One of them is a drawing, and it appears on today's cover of today's podcast. And actually, there's a link on today's show notes. It's a Flickr link. I want you to go there, because what I've done is I've uploaded different renderings of Jesus from different vantage points. For instance, West African people will visualize Jesus in a complexion and in a theme that is close to them. Swedish Jesus, Russian Jesus. Would you believe that I even have a feminine Jesus? Take a look at the pictures, okay? Take a look at the different pictures. And these are from just all different sources. And I put them together for today's podcast. I'd be happy to expose the sources. It just takes time, so I wasn't ready to do that. But I wanted to have it ready so that as we talk, you can peek in and take a look at these different Jesuses. Now, there is one that in particular is very special to me. It's come along for the ride with me, It is in the bottom of that list. It's the last two, but that one that is the cover today. It's a white background, pen and ink. That was done for me back in 1973. I was graduating high school, and a young lady named Jasmine Zagor gave me this picture. Now, here's what's interesting to me. I don't know her. I remember her vaguely. I don't know why she knew that this would interest me, but she gave this picture to me, and I've hung on to it. I've clinged to it because I really love it. This picture says a lot about my understanding of what Jesus is. In this picture, you see calmness, you see strength, you see a radical who's ready to take on the world. A radical who is ready to call the revolution. To call the revolution and say that we're ready to do it. We need a revolution. It's part of the times, too. This image of Jesus coming out of the 70s. It was a very special time for me. And this picture, I've had it since graduation. It's been with me in every setting, whether I've gone to school, it's been there in a small little frame, in my offices, in whether in Cupertino, in Pasadena, in Glendale, and now in Pasadena. I mean, this picture is haunting. At the same time, it is revealing about who Jesus is to me. There is another picture that is very special to me, and that's the picture done by Salvador Dali. Salvador Dali, a surrealist, and you've certainly seen his pictures, and you certainly know what they're all about, challenges you to really look beyond reality and understand. And you know, surrealism is an art in itself. It's an expression and art in itself, especially when you look at it from a religious point of view, because, you know, religion is surreal. Yeah, it is, right? Anyway, this particular picture, it's on the bottom of that list. It's the Salvador Dali, the picture of Jesus' Last Supper. And in there, Jesus, with long hair, is looking, and he's got his index finger pointing up. Now, this picture is very special to me because back in the year 2000, I think it was, I was doing a TV show in Glendale TV, and we got an offer from a guy named Vache Mangasarian that we would make a regular TV spot and have a weekly show. And I thought it would be really cool if I had this picture right behind me as I spoke. We took it, and believe it or not, in the year 2000, on a scanner, we took a small little sample of it, and I scanned it at an incredibly high DPI, and we took it to a local printer. I believe it was Kinko's, and he printed something. I would say it has to be a 4-foot by 5-foot huge poster for me of Jesus. And we went off to the studio, ready to do it. Now, this is, we weren't familiar with green screens, blue screens, so we were ready to actually hang this behind me. And when we looked at ourselves in a monitor, you know, I was there and I'm looking at a monitor, it looked humorous because I'm the same size as this Jesus. So it almost looked like we were poking fun at this, like as if I'm sitting down at the same table and having a spot of tea with him. No, absolutely not. That wasn't the intention of it. So I kept this picture, and a very nice young lady who was working at a framing store saw it, and she offered to frame it. So she framed it, and this picture, huge, huge, it takes up the size of a wall, has been hanging in my office from Pasadena to Glendale, and now is in front of me. It's very special because when we went to the Glendale Church in St. Peter's, I'll tell you something, just a small little side fact of it. When we were there, we started decorating because it wasn't an Armenian church. It was a a small little rectangular building that had been used for a variety of purposes. So we were going to convert this into an Armenian church. And I thought it would be beautiful to have this hanging inside of the church, but no. Armenians were a little bit more modest than this. In this picture, he is sleeveless on one side, exposing a nipple. And believe it or not, yeah, even in the 21st century, people were offended by that. That was in the year 2003. So anyway, it got better use and was more appreciated, this picture being in my office. Anyway, so if you look at the entire pictures that I put up there on Flickr, you'll see all the different renderings of Jesus. The last one is the one I'm talking about by Salvador Dali. The one right next to it is the one by Jasmine Zagor. In it, it tells a story. Now, why is this so important? Well, you know, our images of Jesus tell us what our faith is. Yes, they do. Because what you understand about Jesus, it tells you how you're going to be living that life. You've come to accept Jesus, whether you call it a personal savior, a salvation moment, you call it a born-again moment, whether you call it just an opportunity to converse with him. You know, you pray to him. He is a central figure in your life. And as a Christian, there's no other way of explaining Christianity without Christ. It has to be Christ-centered. Now, many people try to do that. Yeah, in reality, that's what we were talking about last week. That's why I said last week we're doing a two-part to celebrate our anniversary. It's a two-part series. We talked about the reality church today. We're talking about that centrality of Jesus Christ in our midst, in the middle of that church. And who is that Jesus Christ? Now, many people have referred to Jesus in many different ways. When you look at a picture of Christ, now it becomes tangible. Now Christ comes out of the story because you have an image in your head about what Jesus looks like. Like, does it bother you that he's always with long hair? Does it bother you that he's always pictured with a beard? Did he shave? Did he have facial hair? Maybe he was so perfect that he didn't have nubbles, right? I mean, think about it for a moment. Yeah, that's probably going on the extreme, but all of these things are factored in as people write out and make their images of Christ. When you walk into any Armenian church, what do you see? The first thing you see at the central place at the altar is Astvadazin, is the Blessed Virgin Mary, holding Jesus. Now that Jesus, if you look carefully, is pictured in many, many different ways. I've seen him in different ways. You've seen him as a king, sometimes as a warrior in the sense that even though he's a baby, you've seen him with his broad chest and holding up the cross like he's ready to take on the world. You've seen him holding an orb. Sometimes you've seen him cradled by the Blessed Mother, right? I've seen Jesus where he's in the bosom of the Mother. I mean, there's all kinds of pictures, and these are the images that we grow up with and we see. I've shared with you in the past that unfortunately much of our idea of Christianity is shaped by Hollywood. They give us so many pictures. In olden times, we had the icons, iconography. In itself, iconography was a prayer, and each of those icons says so much about the faith of the person. So we all have these images. And for me, these couple that I shared with you are central because they express a radical Jesus. Now, when you talk about the image of Jesus, of course, you have to bring into the storyline the Shroud of Turin. So let me do that right after the song, okay? Yeah, I think I'll wait. Because there's some good stuff. Anyway, I hope you're with me on this one. We're getting a little bit personal. I hope you don't mind. I want to just share with you. Let's take a break right now. We do every week. We share a song of the day, one dedicated to Jesus Christ. Without any hesitation, without any apologies. Enjoy.
Ran into Mother Mary.
Jesus. How simple is that? Right to the point, right? Donna Summers. Yes, for all you disco fans, all of you from the late 70s. Donna Summers doing I Believe in Jesus. And, you know, that simplicity is sometimes very important in religion for us to latch on to that simplicity. Just a simple statement of faith. Because you don't need any complicated thing. There's a beautiful part in our divine liturgy that I always pause in, and it really means something to me when I say those words. It says, Chau tiamkov Christos pergichmer, vori vere kanzamenai midas yevasbanas. The peace that you, Lord our God, Christ our Savior, have given us, that peace is above our understanding and our words. And it's in that simplicity that we really find some of the most profound expressions of God and his love for us. So just wanted to share that. And that's why we're doing today the images. Images, if you think about it, are our first foot through the door. What is Jesus? Who is Jesus? We see an image and we start developing upon that. So we've had many, many images. We're going to be looking at a few more coming up right now.
Bye.
images of Jesus. That seems to be the topic today as we begin our 12th year of podcasting, The Next Step. The Next Step, trying to understand our faith, connecting the dots. Who is Jesus? What is Jesus all about? And our first glimpse of Jesus is in those expressions that we have through art, through pictures, through drawings. People have tried to express what Jesus is to them. And I was thinking about that as we were playing the song today. You think about, well, how about those who don't have the ability to see, the sightless? What are their first images? Well, certainly that those images come in different ways. They come through music. They come through song. Perhaps that song. Perhaps another song. Perhaps it comes to them from stories that are being told. I remember the rock opera Jesus Christ Superstar back in 1970. It came out and it still reverberates until I think last year they had a well, let's see, what is that? 1970. It's almost 50 years. Whoa. I remember last year John Legend did a version of it, and you know, it still talks to people in different ways. And, well, it should. 50 years, I said it like, whoa, 50 years, because I lived through those 50 years. But when you think in the grand scheme of things, I mean, we're talking about a tradition that began 2,000 years ago when Jesus walked through the streets of Jerusalem. Now, with that being said, how about the Shroud of Turin? Or how about Veronica's Veil? You know that there are millions of people who go after these kind of images. And if you think that what I'm talking about today is not important, you should see the number of people who go after to look at an image of Christ. Yeah. Think about that for a moment. The tourist attraction that these things draw. Well, back in 2006, the Pope, then Pope, had an opportunity to go see Veronica's Veil. Now, Veronica's Veil is, you're probably familiar with the Shroud of Turin. That was the shroud in which Jesus was wrapped in the grave. And then upon his resurrection, the shroud was left, bearing an image of Jesus on the shroud. And apparently, Veronica was a devout woman who was there at the time of the crucifixion, extended a handkerchief to Jesus, who wiped the blood and the sweat off of his face. And apparently, the image that's created on that handkerchief resembles the Shroud of Turin. So this came to light back in 2006, when the Pope was going to visit for the first time and see the Veronica's Veil. So let me read to you an interesting thing that I came across in preparation for today's podcast. It was a question that was thrown out to me in 2006 in the Glendale News Press. I was writing an article there once a week at the time, and this is what they asked. Pope Benedict last week visited Veronica's Veil, which some Christians say was used to wipe the blood and sweat off of Jesus' face on his way to his crucifixion. It was the Pope's first visit to the shrine in Manapella, Italy, where the veil is said to bear the true likeness of Christ's face, a likeness that reportedly resembles the likeness on the Shroud of Turin. The Pope stopped short of endorsing the image as that of Christ, but do you believe this likeness and offers, like the Shroud, are true depictions of Christ? What are your thoughts on what Christ looked like? Hey, back in 2006, they were asking this question. So I piped in with this answer. Jesus had long hair, a beard, and eyes that pulled you in. He had soft but strong features, handsome but not seductive, and he donned a perpetual look of contentment. At least that's how Hollywood has presented him to us. And that Jesus has found his way into many of our churches. A quick glance at the ethnic churches will paint a bit different picture. In our Armenian church, his eyebrows and beard may be a bit more pronounced. In the African church, his coloring is much darker, just as he's much fairer so on the walls of the Russian church. And the beauty of all of the art is that each of these depictions is an exact rendering of Jesus. I want to say that again. This is very important right now. Each one of those pictures is an exact rendering of Jesus. According to our faith, Jesus is God personified, that is, love incarnate. Love does not have a face, but a heart. It is in the expressions of the heart, through helping, caring, healing, living, that we witness God. And that is what Jesus looks like. For 2,000 years, people have been picking up cloths, veils, and other objects trying to identify the cross. And I imagine the search for a connection to the historical Jesus will continue. The real search begins by looking within and seeing the image of Christ etched on our hearts, waiting to be released in our love and care for others. That's it. All the pictures that we have express what we want to see in Jesus. They express our personal faith and personal understanding. But they're all tangible, they're all physical, they're all drawings, they're all images. The real God is beyond all that. The other day, as you know, in September, I'm going to be leading a pilgrimage to Armenia. The other day, one of our dear Bible study members asked me, I've heard that you don't want to go to Jerusalem. You don't want to do a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. Kind of caught me off guard. I said, I don't know about where you've heard that, but to be honest with you, I have no particular desire to see Jerusalem. What? How could you not want to go there? You know, this is the place where Jesus walked. Well, yeah. Yeah. But Jesus walked beyond Jerusalem. He walked everywhere, right? He walked on this planet. Jerusalem is part of the planet. When you think about what happened in Ichmiadzin, in Armenia, no other country in the world has a story of Ichmiadzin, the begotten son, the only begotten son, has descended, has come there. So this is where you're going to build the church. So it's not like one holy shrine is better than the other. It's like, why are these things important? Why do the faithful have such a will to believe in something and call it the name they choose, having chosen nothing? Ian Anderson said that in one of his songs. Very profound. We look and we find images. We find, for me, the 1973 picture of Jesus. I see revolution. I see a bit of myself and my understanding of who Christ is. Why I want to follow Jesus Christ. Mother Teresa, now Saint Teresa, once wrote, "Who is Jesus for me?" It's a little long, but let me read it. Let me share it with you. Who is Jesus for me? Jesus is Word made flesh. Jesus is bread of life. Jesus is the sacrificial lamb offered for our sins on the cross. Jesus is the victim offered at Holy Mass for the sins of the world and for my sins. Jesus is the word that must be spoken. Jesus is the truth that must be proclaimed. Jesus is the light that should shine out. Jesus is the life that should be lived. Jesus is the love that we should love. Jesus is the joy that we should dispense. Jesus is the peace that we should give. Jesus is the bread of life to be eaten. Jesus is the hungry one whom we are to feed. Jesus is the thirsty one whom we are to give drink. Jesus is the naked one whom we are to clothe. Jesus is the homeless one whom we are to welcome in. Jesus is the sick one whom we are to heal. Jesus is the lonely one whom we are to love. Jesus is the unwanted one whom we are to accept. Jesus is the leper to whom we are to give a smile. Jesus is the drunkard to whom we are to listen. Jesus is the handicapped whom we are to protect. Jesus is the little child whom we are to embrace. Jesus is the blind man whom we are to lead. Jesus is the cripple with whom we are to walk. Jesus is the drug addict whom we are to befriend. Jesus is the prostitute whom we are to save from danger and with whom we are to be friends. Jesus is the prisoner whom we are to visit. Jesus is the old man or woman whom we are to serve. For me, Jesus is my God. Jesus is my bridegroom. Jesus is my life. Jesus is my only love. Jesus is my all in all. Jesus is my one and all. Jesus, I love you with my whole heart, with my whole being. I have given him everything, even my sins, and he has taken me to be his bride in tenderness and love. Now and for my whole life, I am the bride of my crucified bridegroom. Amen. Wow. Mother Teresa, Saint Teresa of the Roman Catholic Church. What a beautiful expression. Jesus, at some point you have to confront Jesus and say what he is to you. In the pictures that we see, in the words that we hear, in the expressions, in the songs, we come up with an image of Jesus that resounds with us, that resonates with us, within us. And in that resonation, we are to find our mission and our goal. The pictures that I shared with you, very personal for me, in them I see the image of that person who I want to serve. When Jesus says, I came to bring a sword, I came to stir up, I came to bring peace, to have life abundantly, we are not to understand these as mutually exclusive of one another. Yes, peace does mean to have that life abundantly, but it also means to stir up the pot, because you cannot deal with the injustice that is taking place all around you. And Jesus came into a world that was unjust, that was unsettling, and he came on a mission. Now, we all have our different understandings of Jesus. To me, that was important. To Mother Teresa, that was her understanding of Jesus, what I just read. For me, it's just as important for me to understand that the Christ that I serve is one who calls us to be his feet, to be his hands. And yet for others, it could be just an image. It could be we like the comfort that Jesus gives. In other words, I can sit here and I can enjoy a beautiful cup of tea with Jesus. Jesus is my love. And that doesn't have to translate into any action. It doesn't work for me. It doesn't work for me, and that's probably why sometimes when we talk about the In His Shoes experience, people don't understand that In His Shoes experience is truly a Christian radical approach to not only loving your brother or sister, but to actually walk in their shoes, to have an understanding of your brother or sister. Recently, I came across a book called Counterculture, The Compassionate Call for Counterculture. It is by David Platt. There was so much in this book that really resonated with me. It is, obviously, David Platt has his own background and brings a lot of baggage, too. I don't want to get into the politics or anything, but he does bring up some good points about the church. Let me share with you. Some of the villages in these mountains, he's talking about some mountains up in the Himalayas, are virtually devoid of young girls between the ages of 5 and 15. Their parents were persuaded by the promises of a better life for their daughters, so they sent them off with men who turned them into turned out to be traffickers. Most of these girls live to see their 8th birthday, but by their 16th birthday, they are forced to have sex with thousands of customers. They will never see their families again. When we meet people, hear stories, and see faces of injustice like this around the world, it is altogether right for us to respond with compassion, conviction, and courage. Compassion overwhelms us because we care deeply for children, parents, and families whose lives are filled with pain and suffering. Conviction overtakes us, for everyone of us knows instinctively that stories like these should not be so. It is not right for half the children in the Himalayan villages to die before their 8th birthday. It is not fair for children born with disabilities to be chained in barns for their entire lives. It is unjust for pimps to deceive parents into selling their precious daughters as sex slaves. Ultimately, such compassion and conviction fuel courage. Courage to do something, anything, for the sake of Radha, Kansing, Chimi, these girls, their parents, their villages, and countless other children, women, and men like them around the world. You hear of these stories all the time. They come on our news. Is there supposed to be an answer? As Christians, is there supposed to be, not as supposed to be, is it mandated that we answer? He continues, in light of these global realities, I am greatly encouraged when I see compassion, conviction, and courage in the church today. As I listen to the way contemporary Christians talk, especially, though not exclusively, younger evangelicals, I perceive fierce opposition to injustice regarding the poor, the orphan, and the enslaved. I observe increased awareness of social issues. In the middle of it all, I sense deep dissatisfaction with indifference in the church. We simply aren't content with a church that turns a blind eye and a deaf ear to the realities of social injustice in the world. We want our lives and the church to count for social justice. Now, certainly people can argue against this. And say, hey, the church has no business doing things like this. The church should be a place where we have fellowship. We hear the word of Jesus Christ. We hear Bible. Yeah. There certainly are people who say that, right? It's just not me. It's never been me. And in that image of Jesus, I see that. I see that rejection of everything we've been taught that church should be. And that picture means something to me because I see that. And also at the time, 1973, I'm a young man who's going through so much, trying to find myself, to reading the Gospels and putting it into place. I've read Les Miserables. I've seen the movie. I've seen a character, Jean Valjean, who's a total outcast and the only compassion that he sees in his life is vis-a-vis a church person. The good bishop who accepts him, the good pastor, the good priest, and the power of that priesthood. I see in that same picture, in that same drawing, a similarity, a reflection of Aqualung, so important at that time and still is. that the question, how can we smile when our own mothers are hungry? And when we have no reason to complain in our first world situation, when there are so many in the third world complaining, what is it that I must do in this world? And so it's never been a question of putting Jesus on a pedestal that I cannot reach, but rather putting him on a pedestal to be the inspiration, to be my example of what I have to aspire towards. That's the Jesus that I see. That's the Jesus in my life. That's the Jesus that clicks with me. And that's the Jesus that I've given my life to. Did you catch that in Mother Teresa's statement? Jesus Christ is the prostitute. Ooh. People would take offense at that. I think there's many people that would. Not all Christians, but many people would take offense at that. But you understand what she was saying, right? As somebody who needs help. And these are not words that she made up. These are words that come to us from Christ. I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was in prison and you visited me. I was sick and you came in and comforted me. That's it. Seeing the face of Christ. Seeing in those pictures the idea of who Jesus Christ is. In the pictures that I shared with you on that Flickr thing, there is one very special one that I want you to notice as listeners of this podcast. It happens to be the image of Jesus in Etchmiadzin. Actually, when you go into the Vehapars, to the Catholicos' home, that picture of Jesus is at the entryway. It always spoke to me as a student whenever I'd have a chance to go in there to do an errand or a cleanup or something. It was just a beautiful moment to see that picture. And later on, through the marvels of internet, we were able to get that picture. That's also in that. I call that the Jesus at the Veharan. You'll catch that. And to me, that's the Armenian Jesus, one that invites, one that talks, one that shares with us. You see, last week, as a preface to today, I gave you the reality church. Church that has relevance. It has to. It's existing today. It is not dead. It is not a museum piece. It is a living, functioning body. And as such, it has to talk to the times. It has to be relevant in our lives today. And this is what this call to the counterculture, this is what he's talking about in this book. This is what we see over and over. This is what I see in the face of Christ. That it is not a Christ that's supposed to be up on an altar and us bowing down. You look at that Christ, and in that Christ you should see one who came to serve, one who saw something wrong with the system, who understood that there was something greater and that the power of God is not in something that's outside of us, but is within us. That the kingdom of heaven is enacted right now, and it involves all of us participating and for us coming together. Now, there are so many dimensions to the Christian story, and people take and choose whatever they want. I'm sharing with you that image of Christ that speaks to me, and it is very real, and it is very important, especially as an Armenian. You know, there's some issues that we go through too. April 24th comes around. Everybody becomes Armenian on this day to commemorate something that happened over 100 years ago. And yet, that same actions that took place 100 years ago are taking place right now in this world. And so to not make that connection is a fault. In fact, it is what we call sin. It's missing the mark on the most essential of what Christ has given us. The image of Jesus all around us. And that's what I wanted to share with you today as we begin our 12th year of podcasting, for us to understand that that Jesus that we have in our hearts, and we understand there's an image in our head. It's about finding that Jesus in our lives here in the 21st century. Listen, this book that I quoted out of called The Compassionate Call to Counterculture, I highly recommend that you read it. I'll put a link on today's show notes. Let me just share with you something coming out of the first. Well, you know what? Let me do it, okay? The gospel is the lifeblood of Christianity, and it provides the foundation for countering culture. And when we truly believe the gospel, we begin to realize that the gospel not only compels Christians to confront social issues in the culture around us, the gospel actually creates confrontation with the culture around and within us. I'll leave it there. There's so much we can talk about. I wanted to talk to you about ecclesiastical triage today, believe it or not. An opportunity to have triage. That's going to have to wait till next week. Today, we just looked at the various images of Christ. So much more to say, and I would love to hear from you. Your image of Christ. What is that image and what it means to you? For right now, here's Susie to make her announcement. I'll be back in a few moments.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for the announcement, and thank you for all your hard work, and thank you to our listeners for all of your support, your prayers, your words, your prayers. Wow, I can't believe it. We are at year 11. We just are celebrating our 11th year of podcasting, starting our 12th year. It is really humbling. It's unbelievable. I never imagined it would go this long. And it really has to do with all of your support. I'm not talking just the financial. I'm talking about your words, just being places and having so many of you come up and share your thoughts and tell me that you're listeners. You believe in what we're doing. You know, it goes a long way. We started podcasting 11 years ago today. When people not only didn't understand podcast, they didn't even know what podcast was. What? Podcast? Are you mispronouncing broadcast? No. It's a podcast. And there were these little iPods, and the iPhone came along and kind of changed the way we look at life and listen to life and hear life and understand life. And so we're one of the old ones here on this planet. And I want to thank you. I want to thank you for this beautiful opportunity. You can't believe how cathartic and therapeutic it is for me to sit on this side of the microphone and just sort of like talk to share with you so much of what goes on in this priest's life. So thank you, and God bless you. This Sunday happens to be the Feast of Holy Etchmiadzin. I'm going to be at the St. Leon Armenian Cathedral in Burbank. We're going to be kicking off a new program for the renovation of the dome and Etchmiadzin itself. I'll have a lot to tell you next week about it. If you happen to be in town, please do stop by and see us. In the meantime, you can connect with us at all the socials and, of course, at inissues.org. So let's call it a day with that and get ready for a fantastic year ahead of us, 12th year of podcasting. We have some exciting stuff coming up. They're in note form right now, but trust me, if you liked it so far, you're going to like the rest. I want to thank you all for all of the support and just for joining us. God bless you all. Keep Christ in focus. Keep him in the center of your life. You're not going to go wrong. He's not going to let you down, because in Christ we see humanity. In Christ we see this world. We see the universe. We see the grandeur of God. We see the beauty that is on all sides of us. God bless you all. For the wonderful team who put today's show and the last 475 shows together. On behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Boskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Does Hagrid come from a cow too? The boy cow or the girl cow?